listening to Omnus Protocol. I am Charles, also known as Omnus, and returning to the show is Jacob from Xavier Protocols. Welcome back, man.
Thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure.
It's been way too long, but I'm super excited for this episode with you.
Yeah, it's a good topic, I think. It's something I've been thinking about as well.
Yeah, honestly, so well, I should probably explain the topic, but it's one that, before I tell you what it is, I think this is something that we've all subconsciously thought about, and maybe some people have, like, said it out loud, but for the most part, I haven't heard people talking about it. And what happened was, is I was watching a game, and I thought that the person with priority had the absolute perfect plan. They had the right crisis. They had the right team. Everything was set up for them to win this game, except they had priority, and their whole plan seemed to hinge on not having priority. And it made me step back and think, wait a minute, how much am I stopping and thinking and allowing whether or not I have priority in the game to affect my tactic card selection, my team selection? How much am I letting that in? And so this is where the idea for this kind of follow-up episode to controlling priority, and now we have the new episode concerning priority. This is not about how you are trying to control priority over the course of the game, like what we talked about in the first episode. This one is about, okay, you've gotten down to the table, you know what the crisis is, and you know whether or not you have priority, right? I know, Jacob, you've played a fair amount of HeroClix. There's a lot of games out there that you decide what you're playing before you know who's going first, right? Magic the Gathering. You have already picked your deck, right? Before you know who's going first. War Machine. It's across the board. But if you stopped and thought about those other games and like, if I knew that I was going second in Magic and I could choose which deck I was bringing based on that information, that would absolutely be a huge impact, right? Like, there's no situation where it wouldn't.
Or even if you could just sideboard knowing whether you were going first or second, even that, which is kind of more analogous to the situation we've got, that's still a big deal.
Right. And this is where I've been wondering, it made me step back and go, how much am I letting the choice or letting that information about priority affect my decisions? So why don't you start us off, Jacob? What would you say are some good examples of strategies that either favor having priority or favor not having priority?
So I think the classic kind of way of splitting this up is,
you know, I like classics.
The beat down versus the control. And this is something you see a lot where someone brings a beat down list. You know, the one that springs immediately to mind is Cabal, but maybe something like Black Order as well, or maybe some Guardians lists, where they want to be going early with big characters doing lots of damage and trying to get ahead on victory points through attrition. So they want to be attacking before they are attacked, whereas a control player may have pushes, throws, things like that, that they want to go late in the round and have the last activation in the round to try and do some sort of secure plays. So I think that's kind of the obvious one I think most people will have had some exposure to.
Absolutely agree. I do think the direct analogy of beatdown and control gets a lot more complicated in MCP, but I think the core of what you're saying is the lists that are very Daze and KO focused, like say Cabal, tend to prefer having priority. They want to strike and then potentially KO a character at the start of a turn and like have that dictate the rest of the game. Whereas, say, like Wakanda wants to have the very final activation in the round to create some sort of crisis advantage, like Shuri pushing someone off of a point, that sort of thing, where they can go, okay, I'm going up on the crisis because I had the last activation. And that's two very, very different play styles.
Yeah. So I think most people sort of favor one or the other. They have like a way they like to play.
Recognizing
that and building your roster around that is something that you need to be doing at roster construction.
Exactly. And so I have been playing, I would say this is probably a little bit more of a control strategy, but I've been very focused on playing a lot of Deadly Meteors lately and using Asgard to kind of like heavily impact the and go like all in on the crisis. This one's a little bit harder to like go, do you prefer going first? Do you prefer going second? But it how I build the team is obviously important, because you kind of want, like, you kind of want to go first at the beginning, but you kind of want the last activation later on, because you want to be able to, like, move up, flip the first meteor where there's no competition, and then hopefully get, like, the final say in, like, each of the following rounds. And so these are just, like, some good examples of how priority impacts how you're going to play. Do you think there's any, like, less obvious examples that we haven't gone over yet?
Yeah, I think a really big one is, you know, you have priority or don't have it before you choose which crisis you're playing. And there are some crises where I think you maybe are better off choosing them if you have priority, or maybe you're better off choosing other ones if you don't have priority. So I'm particularly thinking about extract crises here, because sometimes you get extract with an even number of extracts to go and grab, and sometimes you get them with an odd number. And I think that generally the even numbers favor the people who don't have priority, because when you've got that priority, you can run out and grab and maybe secure and potentially even bring back with a clever play a crisis, an extract token, and get an immediate VP advantage. And then you've got you're getting an early advantage that your opponent is having to overcome, and that's just setting you up well for the first turn. If you haven't got priority and you give your opponent the opportunity to do that, that can often cause problems for you in the longer run of the game.
I totally agree. That's something I think you and I had been discussing Gamma Wave quite a bit. And I think we both eventually reached to the point where we're probably not picking Gamma Wave if we're going first.
Yeah, I think that's true. Those control on Gamma Wave is really, really strong, but control activating last on Gamma Wave is strong. And so therefore you don't want to have priority. So actively pursuing Gamma Wave as a strategy, unless you have some tech, which we'll probably get onto later, to manipulate that priority to where you want it to be. Actively choosing Gamma Wave is something that I was really keen on about 4 months ago, and now I've just completely moved away from, and it's now a very reactive pick. Oh, okay, you've given me secures to choose. Right, well, now I can choose Gamma Wave, and I'm happy with that.
Exactly. And I don't think it was a wrong decision 4 months ago, because I don't think there was enough rosters that were prepared for it. Mm. There was so many people were really focused. And I will say, to a certain extent, even I was, where there was this point where we were all playing Infinity Formula, right? Like just probably 80% of games, if I were to just throw out a random number, I feel like a huge majority of games were being played on Infinity Formula. And that was kind of the baseline. Like, oh, something new comes out, let's practice it on Infinity Formula, right? And when you're tweaking your roster, right? And I think in the beginning, there's a lot of, and again, I was totally guilty of this, where I was building a roster and, like, all of my, like, last three or four roster slots were, rather than being built towards different crises, they were being, like, those characters being put in there because I'm like, oh, against this particular matchup on Infinity Formula, I want Vision. And on in this other matchup on Infinity Formula, I want this character, right? Like, that's how I was building there for a little while. And I think your strategy at that time of, like, I'm going to force you to play Gamma Waves against a five-character team, and you're going to hate it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have seen that now and have got their heads around it, but it's still a very strong strategy, but it's particularly strong when you don't have priority.
Yes, and I think it's something you will selectively pick. You can look at a roster and go, oh, they don't have a good, even if they are going second, they don't have a good team for Gamma Wave. And so, and some affiliations just can't do it. They are either, you can see or look down at the roster and go, that affiliation just can't do it. They have a four threat leader and no two threat. Like, their ability to build a solid 15 threat, five character team is bad. So let's do this. But to get back on the point, this is the kind of stuff that we want you thinking about, and what this episode is meant to provoke thoughts in. And I think there are specific characters and cards, and again, as we were saying, crisis selection, I'm really glad that you brought that up. I'm going to throw one out here. I think Cubes is a particularly interesting crisis for the more Daze and KO focused teams. And I think it's even better for the Daze and KO focused team when you are being forced to go second. And the reason for this is you want your opponent to expose themselves, right? You want to be able to make attacks on them. And so if they are going first, you end up putting them in a position where either they have to go for that center token and expose themselves to let you start getting that attacks rolling, or they have to concede and let you go pick it up with the last action. And I just think obviously there's a few situations where you could do stuff like advanced R&D with Black Panther and Avengers so that he can get it and then like back up as well. So there's some corner cases where that may not work, but this is just an example of a selection that I think you can make based on not having the optimal priority for your team that can help swing things back in your favor.
Yeah, I think it's complex. I think what you're hinting out there and haven't spelled out specifically is the damage they're taking from the cubes is helping your KO focus team. That sort of nickel and dime damage is then skewing your maths and making it more likely that you get that daze or KO is I think what you're hinting at.
And I was also saying that you can pretend it's easier to make attacks on someone when they're in the middle of the board.
That's true, but I think certainly my experience of how that plays out is typically it's a little bit of a cat and mouse game, because if the very first thing you do is move a character up and grab that central cube, then they've got their entire team to secure their two cube fragments that are near them and do something nasty to your character in the middle. So you probably don't want to go and grab it with your very first activation. But then you're like, okay, well then they're your opponents in the same situation. Do I grab that one in the middle? But then they've still got all but one of their characters to go for it. So then you've got to do this kind of fine judgment and weighing of risk of when do I pull the trigger on going for that one? Now you said maybe you leave it to last. I don't think that's ever going to happen, because if you've only got one character left, I'm struggling to think of any situation where I really favor that last character you've got taking out pretty much any character that I would send up to grab that cube with my last activation.
Well, I think, say, if you're playing against Cabal or something, it's very easy to have a very offensive character that's been, Red Skull has teleported them forward. So whether we're talking about Valkyrie just being able to charge to the middle, all it takes is the one place and she gets there, or MODOK with one teleport can easily blast anyone who picks up the centerpiece. Something like you could set something up where, like, I'm going to go get it, or I'm going to annihilate whatever you have to go pick it up. And I just think it's not something where like do this every single time. This is a tool for the toolkit, right? Like it's something for you to have as an option if it feels right in that situation.
Yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying. And those are two great examples of Valkyrie and MODOK, you know, when you've teleported them forwards with Red Skull. So I can see particularly for Cabal, but even then the maths, although they might be dishing out a good amount of damage, the maths I don't think favors them in, you know, dazing. You might be, I haven't run the numbers, but my gut feeling is we're sort of talking 30, maybe 40% odds, depending on the characters. It doesn't feel like it's a surefire thing.
Oh yeah, it really depends on what the character is, whether we're talking about other tactics cards, like when we start getting into the exact math. But sometimes you just need to get that damage rolling to make it easy for you to daze at this, you know, at another point. It all factors in, right? And so it's just, these are some of the ideas that I want people to think about. Do you have, before we kind of like dive fully into the possible suggestions, was there anything that I kind of like went by too quickly to give you a chance to talk about as far as examples of strategies that favor one direction or the other?
Struggling to think of any others.
No problem. Well, we can move on then. Okay, so what we want to talk about at this part of the episode is specific suggestions for your team composition or tactics card selection that will assist you based on your spot in whether you have priority or you do not. I think with tactics cards, it can be kind of easy. There's certain ones like I love Disarm. It is a fantastic card, but it is considerably better when you have priority. because it's something where it's easier for you to like take your first action, you know, do something really impactful, and then also disarm one of their most important characters to kind of set things up so that you start off a turn really strong. I think to a certain extent, Inspiring Monologue, Doomed Prophecy. I want to say there's another one, but now I'm forgetting it. The cards that are like, you kind of want to play right at the beginning of the round. And so if you have priority, they are better.
Yeah,
or at least easier to use.
Vibranium Shielding is another one that springs to mind, although it's not used that often.
Yep, for sure. It's, I mean, that one's definitely a strong card, but it's a question of like, does it always make your teams? But yeah, that one is one that's a lot easier to play. I think it's still one where you can often find a good spot. Like, oh, now we're at a point where they haven't activated anything on this side of the board, and I want Shuri for the last activation. So giving her added durability at this point is a good move.
I think some we touched on before, but just to recap, the ones that actively mess with priority, so things like Cosmic Invigoration and Follow Me, and the new card. God, the names escaped me just for a second.
Are you talking about All You've Got?
All You've Got, yeah. All You've Got. All of those give you either chaining activations or extra activations which impact your priority. So they're cards you might want to consider if you're going, oh, my team really wants priority. Maybe I should be considering taking Follow Me, which I take when I don't have priority in order to win it back. Or maybe you're a team who really doesn't want priority, in which case you're thinking, maybe I could take one of these cards, which will then shift that for me without me having to do anything else, without me having to have someone dazed in order to lose priority.
Yep. I also say, I kind of forgot to say this, like just as an additional concept, you should be thinking about how many characters you're selecting based on whether you have priority and whether you don't. I think this is one of those things I think we all think about, but I felt like it was important to say it out loud. Whereas if you are planning a control strategy game plan and you are going first, you should almost always select five or more characters if you can.
Yeah. So a great example of this, and something I was going to come on to too, but a great example of this is Pat Dunford from Across the Bifrost. If you haven't seen any of his games, he loves a four-character Cabal list. Around that sort of 17, 18 threat value. The idea being he wants to have priority. And if you're running a five character list, then he doesn't have to do anything. And round two, he's got priority just by virtue of having fewer characters than you.
Exactly. And so that's, you know, especially if you are, well, I feel like if you want the Daze and KO plan, like if you can get yourself down to four characters, that's probably smart. But that is still maybe it's because I lean towards playing five character teams, but I'm trying to go, so it's hard for me to put myself in Pat's shoes and go, when do I want four versus when do I want five? Where he was probably a way better person to answer that question.
And I think he's probably going to say, I always want four, unless you're playing like 20.
Unless you basically have to have five.
And we've seen teams as well running three characters at 15. There's been a couple of teams doing that. Again, trying to leverage the fact that they're going to have priority round two pretty much no matter what. So a similar idea there.
Yeah, I think that's hard. I feel like three character teams, I'm not convinced it's a good idea. Unless you're playing herbs, maybe.
Yeah, it definitely has downsides. You're absolutely right. But played well, they can be very effective.
For sure.
What it does mean is you've got very little room for error. If you make a mistake with one of your three characters in just a tiny bit of positioning mistake, that single mistake can cost you the game. So your margin for error is really, really narrow with those lists.
I agree. So also on the topic of how many characters you're playing, how important do you think it is for, say, someone like Wakanda to try to hit six characters at the 19 or 20 threat level, right? Like, say a situation is that you are going first, but you are playing a very control-oriented team. Is it something where with Wakanda that you want to try to hit that sixth character, or is it something where you're going to play five, but because of being able to include some, you know, tankier, more offensive characters in your composition that you may try to strike and, do something really offensive as your first activation, and then you are totally fine having the last activation if you daze someone.
So generally, I think you will be seeing six character teams in Wakanda at those higher threats for a couple of reasons. Wakanda, we've talked about it plenty of times before, it lends itself to that control game which wants to go second. So having a higher character count means you're more likely to be able to play yourself into a position where you don't have priority anymore, or you keep not having priority if that's where you started. The other thing that you've got, particularly with Wakanda, is they've only got four characters in the affiliation, and then they're all pretty cheap. You've got 2 4s, a 3 and a 2. That's what, that's 13 points, 13 threat. If you're playing 19, you've got to take a 6 threat character if you're only playing 5. And if you want to play 6, you have to take all 4 of the Wakandans in order to get the affiliation. So just by virtue of how that affiliation is set up and the characters within it, I think it's going to be pushing you heavily towards a 6 character team at those higher threat values.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think, you know, when I think back, man, it was early this year, and I was thinking how much I disliked most 3 threat characters. And it's really weird for me to think back on that point, because now we have so many amazing 3 threat characters, because we're talking about pre-Valkyrie, right? Where the 3 threat characters would be like Shuri, Winter Soldier, and then
Zemo
stuff, you know, Zemo and Doc Ock and Iron Man. Right? At that point in the game, I did not like 3 threat characters. I was like, if I'm playing a 3 threat character, I'm probably putting in Shuri, and then that's all I want. I don't want, or I'm playing Cabal and my 1 3 threat is Zemo or Crossbones, and that's it. And past that, I want to play the 4 or 5 threat characters. Now I am way more in the most of my teams. It's very rare for me to not play a team with at least 2 3 threat characters.
Well, we've got such good ones now is the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely felt like, now, again, this may just have to do with the matchups, but it did feel a bit like, initially, some of the 3 threats like felt like 3s, and then there was a few 4s that felt like they were worth like 4.5 threat. Mm. And so you felt like you were just getting more value. But then I felt like we got some 3 threats that really felt like they were pushing the, like, man, if this character had like 1 more damage or something, like, you could probably justify a 4 threat. So now I do think it's very feasible to go, okay, well, I'm going to play the 4 Wakandans and then 2 3 threats at 19, maybe Valkyrie and Miles or something. And you can absolutely do that. And yeah, that's forsaking your option of playing like Thor or MODOK and squeezing in one of those 5s. But I think this is the exact kind of decision that we're talking about. Whereas if you're going first and you're playing Wakanda, why not let yourself go to that 6th character? You're still getting 6 great characters, and this is going to allow you to, one, you're going to be able to like get to the spot where you don't have priority and you get that final activation with Valkyrie or Panther or Shuri or whatever it is you want. But also, so you don't get kind of screwed during placement. This is one thing I see. One thing that's rough, if you're playing 4 characters and you're going up against a 5 character team and you're going first, during deployment, you can't pass. So you end up in this spot where when you've done your last character, your opponent has 2 characters to place in counter moves. And so that's something else to think about.
Absolutely. I think it's a really overlooked benefit of not having priority is you get to pick the character matchups to a much greater extent. Now, obviously, there's positioning after deployment, but the base state that the game starts at is something that you're controlling.
Yep. And so as much as, I mean, you can't argue with Pat's, you know, win record, right? But I'm not sure I could play it in the way that he does it, because, well, you really don't have a lot of room for error.
That's very true. But speaking to that point itself, what he does is he understands that his deployment could be incredibly predictable. If you put Skull wide on a flank near a crisis token, you're pretty certain MODOK's going to go with Skull. And the way he gets around that is by deploying them centrally. and then redeploying them out. And there's a small cost to that in terms of what he can get done in the first turn. But I think most of the time that's the right call for that particular way to try and mitigate that that downside to having priority.
I agree with that. I actually, that even when I'm playing five character teams, I find a lot of time I'm deploying somewhat centrally when I can, and kind of foregoing any super explosive turn one plays to trying to make it as difficult for my opponent to predict exactly who's going where. All right, so let's talk a bit more on team composition and tactics cards and how they are affected by choosing priority. Do you think, obviously, if we're talking about the dazing and KOing side, right, I think there is reasonable argument to say maybe the right situation when Cabal reaches for Corvus and Proxima or something like that is obviously when you are wanting to play daze and KO focus, but you're being forced into going second. So it's easier for you to control that because you have the ability to just go, oh, I'll just activate two this turn.
Yeah, they're great characters for that priority manipulation. Again, we touched on that on the earlier episode. It's a strong play, but you're then thinking, well, that's a very particular line. That's seven threat of unaffiliated characters you're playing now in Cabal. That's dictating a lot of your team composition. And you know, maybe it's eight threat if you've got the reality gem on Corvus, and then that's three slots in your roster.
And let's admit,
well,
that reality gem is a really great one threat.
It's a fantastic one threat on Corvus. That's true, but it's still
it's team a lot.
Building, team building can be difficult with that, particularly in Cabal. We've also been talking a lot about Cabal, so I want to hear a bit of your experience about Guardians, in because I know you like to play them with this kind of aggressive KO focus, and what you've been finding with your experience playing Guardians.
That is a great topic, because Guardians obviously, they do want to be putting in some of that offensive pressure, right, that you'd imagine from, say, like a Cabal team. But they also tend to play much higher character count teams. And so I think with them, they may end up being one of the most flexible. And I think that's good reason why I think Guardians teams want a combination of both aspects into their playstyle, because one of the things is they tend to not have a really focal point character like, say, MODOK. You could put MODOK in with them, but they tend to run a variety where it's like, oh, if you take any one piece out of this puzzle, the puzzle still works, and there's no key character that, oh, you daze it, now I'm screwed. It's all, like, it's kind of sacrificial. It's almost like running kind of a spammy army or something where you're just like, yeah, you can take out Rocket, but he wasn't crucial to my plan. I still have other damage dealers, and I will just use whichever damage dealer is available. But it can put Guardians in a weird spot where you don't always know whether or not you're going to be retaining priority, because you can easily have turns where two of your characters get dazed. And so you can be in this weird spot where you need to be ready with them to maybe have priority or maybe not. And it's, I think it's a little harder to predict with them, but their leadership kind of plays into that, where you can have cool cards like Disarm and things like that, but you don't necessarily have to play them in the normal way. You can go, well, if I have priority, I can play them, but if I don't have priority, I can always use them for rerolls. And so I think it's hardest to describe what Guardians does with it, because I think they are one of the affiliations that really has to adapt in the moment and kind of be ready to play both. And so where that, I think, comes back to the original question is, I think Guardians wants to incorporate both strategies into their teams. I wouldn't go all in either direction. Make sure you have at least two control characters, and that could be something like, say, Drax. You know, he's not overt control, but he still has a throw, so he's still a character that can double move. And if he's in your roster for that, probably don't have him pick up an extract unless it's something where he's going to be getting extra power, because you want to get him to that three power so he has the potential to throw someone. And then as long as you have one other character on the team, could be Shuri, could be Thor, could be Valkyrie, could be Loki plus Mind Gem. Like, it could be a lot of different things. But I think have at least two control characters and have at least two high offense characters, which is pretty easy since it starts with Star-Lord. But that's where I would let those things directly impact your team design. Would you agree with that? I don't know how much you've gotten to play Guardians.
Yeah, I mean, certainly a lot of their game plan seems to be about threat saturation. They've just got so many pieces that you just can't ignore, which is frustrating because you just don't have enough actions to deal with them all. So it's about, absolutely, I can see what you're saying. You're right. The interesting bit there is to play against they tend to have a slightly wider, more character list, but want to do a lot of damage, which means they will often end up losing priority. I think, again, you talked about use of tactics cards. I think a great tactics card for them is Follow Me to try and negate that. And if they don't have the power, or it's just gone so badly that they've already got priority and they're being beaten up, you can ditch it for the rerolls again off that leadership. So there's another one that I strongly consider when I'm building the Guardians roster.
Agreed. So this kind of plays into the topic that we're going to get to next, but I did not have this question pre-planned. But because we've hit on it so much, how important do you think it is for teams to have characters that both like having priority and like not having it, right? And so using Wakanda as an example, Killmonger versus Shuri. Shuri likes having the last activation to push someone off a point. Killmonger wants to go first and daze someone at the beginning of a round. Avengers, you could say like Thor can potentially play both ways, right? You could for Asgard first thing and try to like stagger someone at the very least before they get to activate, but he might double move and throw someone off a point late in the round. How essential do you think it is for team building to have both options?
I think it's really important to have, let me put it this way, to have characters who are probably going to want to activate early in the round, and then characters who are going to want to activate late in the round. Because if you don't have that, then someone's not getting what they want on your team. If you have a team full of characters who all want to go first and get in their damage before they get hit and dazed or controlled out, they can't all do that. And equally, if you have a whole load of characters who want to go last and be doing all kind of control shenanigans, they can't all go last. So I think a good team composition will have, I mean, again, we keep talking about Wakanda, but it's a great thing that you've got Killmonger who wants to go early in the round and go and deal some damage and take away activations, and you've got Shuri who wants to go late in the round and score you victory points.
Right, and I'll say in my Asgard, when I have to play Asgard at, say, 19 or 20, there's a reasonable chance that I'm running, say, something like Star-Lord or Proxima in one of my spots, and the reason for that is they tend to be that first character that I activate because they're not nearly as control-oriented, and maybe I just want to, like, soften up a character, or maybe there's a character that I can finish off. It's not that I'm walking in with this, like, I want to go first and have this offensive game plan, but I often want to save all my control-oriented characters for later in the round, and I also generally don't mind when that more offensive, kind of cost-effective three slot gets targeted, so I will do some of my more aggressive moves with them, where I'm like, this person will be in like that little bit easier, this is like the carrot on the end of the stick, right? Like, I'm going to make this character also your easiest target. And so, but they're also the target that I care about the least. Sorry, Peter. I'm not saying I don't care about you. But I have found a lot of time when I'm playing, say, 19 threat Asgard, whoever that flex three spot is, they tend to be my first activation. And so that's another thing that I've stepped back and thought about and go, oh, okay, it's actually good that this is a more offensive character as opposed to, say, maybe putting Gwen into that spot, right? Because she's still kind of a control-oriented character. And it's good reasoning for me to go, well, maybe I don't want Gwen in that spot because it is almost always going to be an early activation on my team. I want it to be someone that's a bit more offensive that is going to take advantage of an earlier activation.
To come back and sort of answer your question more directly, I don't think that having a character, the question of priority sometimes doesn't matter. Very often you'll find that sort of the battlefield evolves into two spheres of influence, you know, something like Infinity Formula or a D-shape, and you've got sort of two corridors that you're fighting in. If you've got priority and then you're going to activate one of your characters on in one of those spheres of influence first, but your opponent can then activate their character in the other sphere of influence first. So it's you get a little bit more control over that because you can choose which one you're going to activate first in, but they're still getting pseudo priority in half the battlefield. So again, as long as you've got those characters who can fill that role of going early, I think often it doesn't matter as much as maybe we might be making it out to matter.
For sure. And it's something, I mean, again, we've talked about Cabal a fair amount, but I've been thinking more about, as originally when Loki came out, I thought of Loki as being a really bad Cabal member. Right? I'm like, his attacks are kind of mediocre. He doesn't have charge. His ranged attacks aren't that far, or they're really expensive. He's a way more defensive character. I'm like, he looks like an Avenger, but he's in Cabal. This feels very strange to me. Now, like months later after his release, I'm looking at him and going, what I love about this is, say, because Cabal loves Infinity Formula, right? And say you're doing Red Skull and MODOK on one side. What if the other side goes more tanky in control, where you're like, okay, on this side of the board, because we always talk about, like, if you go back to the controlling priority episode, we're talking about using Follow Me or something so that after you daze someone, you can then potentially retain priority. But what if the whole plan is, on this side of the board, I'm going to daze someone, and so I will go up on victory points on that side, and then on the opposite side, now that I've dazed someone, I'm going to end up with a last activation, so I have control characters on the other side that's maybe Loki plus Mind Gem and Shuri or something like that, or Valkyrie, or, you know, depending on your threat level. But then on that other side, you're like, well, now if I have to go last, then I have someone like Loki who can like double move and walk someone off of the point. And so that I can then like, just if I get to go first and go last in the same turn, you can capitalize on both things. Mm-hmm. And so it's got me thinking, like, maybe Loki is actually a critical hinge in the Cabal plan, so that you're like, I don't care whether I'm going first or last. I have great things to do either way. And it kind of mitigates what you were just talking about, where you're like, okay, if I am going to go first on this one side, but then I have to kind of take the alpha on the other side, and your other side is a more tanky, control-oriented team, you're going to also be able to blunt that assault on that other side. So that's also something I've been thinking about.
I can see that. I think there's an interesting thing. I'm not sure I see many situations where, I know Shuri's very good in Cabal, and lots of people love her in Cabal. I'm not sure I see many situations where you play Shuri and Loki in the same list. I think they might be kind of filling a similar sort of role to each other there.
I almost want to kind of challenge you on this. Originally, I was thinking that I don't like Shuri in Cabal because I think giving more rerolls to MODOK. But I do actually like Shuri and Loki as a pairing. I ended up playing them together in one of the recent YouTube videos where I had Loki and Mind Gem in my Wakanda list. And I had Shuri and Loki kind of like tank up one side. And I found I really liked how they worked together, where Shuri then gets to activate a little bit earlier. She doesn't have to be the last activation. And so she gets to generate the ability to have more rerolls kind of mid-turn. And then she gives rerolls to Loki, which cranks up his survivability. And she's pushing people out of position, like controlling a MODOK or something like that, where, oh yeah, he's been teleported forward. Well, now I'm going to push him backwards, so at least he's not getting to double attack, or, you know, stuff like that. I think Loki and Shuri on a side could be a really interesting counter. I wouldn't count it out. I'm not saying it's like the end all be all or anything, but I'm just saying don't count it out.
Maybe I need to play it a bit more, but my experience and thinking on it is that the Loki can be survivable, but often he isn't. It's not unusual to see him get flipped relatively early. And he's great when he's flipped because his bubble of annoyance gets better. But if you're thinking about using it to hold and try and control a flank, I don't feel they've got the survivability to hold a flank. Maybe for a turn, but not in the long term in the game. It's not like I can don't have to worry about that flank. I've got Loki and Shuri over there. I'm not sure that I see that panning out.
Fair. And it's really something where it has to be a combination of their powers and stuff used at the right time to make that work, right? Because you've got to have Shuri pushing people away so they're not getting the double attacks, and her giving rerolls to Loki's to up his survivability. Mm-hmm. It kind of is like, it is kind of a lot of cogs that kind of have to work together, right? But I do feel like when it is, it can be a powerful combination. But to use this exact situation, let's say you are planning to play Loki in a Cabal team as that flip side, like this is what I'm going to do when I'm going last. What would you say is the best unaffiliated character to potentially pull into that spot? Would you think maybe like Vision or something that kind of has some offensive potential, but also, you know, can't be pushed off, like that sort of thing? What do you think?
I was thinking Hela for a couple of reasons. Number one, I just love the idea that the Asgardians have got that flank. number two, she's bringing another stronger mystic threat. So if you're facing off against something like a Black Panther, you're like, well, I've got MODOK on one side and I've got Hela on the other. There's no good place for Panther to go there. She's very survivable if you play her back a bit more. She can, as long as you're not rushing her forwards loads, she can gather those souls, and she combos really well with the Cabal leadership ability to get the extra power to fuel her soul gaining. And then you've got these characters, Loki, who gets harder to kill when he's on his flip side because of his change in his preventing crits, and Hela, who's, if she's got three soul tokens, she can, unless you're really focusing on her, she can cycle through those quite quickly and get them back again.
Agreed.
So for a number of reasons, I quite like Hela in that slot.
So I could follow up question, because I don't disagree with anything that you just said. I actually think that Hela, I had to play against it recently and I don't feel like I'd given it enough credit before, and I was like, man, this is actually super rough. But I'm going to, because my real question was a control specific character under the concept of, if you're using Loki and another character to go on this side of the table, I want the last activation. Now, mind you, I still think Hela kind of plays into that, right? You're right. She is survivable. She does give you powerful offensive threat and she's not easy to remove. But I still want to get an answer for, if you're going control on that side with a specific concept of MODOK and Red Skull are going to take the first activation and wreck side A. Now I'm going to lose priority, but that means I'll get the last activation. What do you think is the best combo for the other side of the table? If you're going with that strategy, not saying it's necessarily right. The right choice.
Okay. I think in that case, just thinking, doing some quick mental maths there on build numbers, you're looking at probably a 4 threat for a 19 crisis or a 3 threat for an 18 crisis, aren't you? That's the most likely setup where you've got those combination of
characters. It would be 3 for 17, 4 for 18, or yes. Yeah. 17, so, you'd have a 3 threat.
Okay. Yep. In which case, so I'm thinking for 3 threat, I think I'd like Valkyrie there. Valkyrie's got that pivot. She can, if there's a target you need to take down, she's great for doing that. But she's also got that double move throw, which is guaranteed. She's another. It's no surprise I'm spouting Valkyrie. Everywhere I go, I say she's great. She is. For 4, I can see Vision. I'm struggling to say anything else. There's some cute
plays. I was catching you off guard with this one a little bit. But it's just kind of, these are the sort of ideas I want people thinking about.
There's actually some stuff you can do with Spider-Man.
I agree.
So I'm not saying, you know, Spider-Man's going to trounce that flank, but he has got some really strong control elements. And he can also use his web line to pull people in towards a sort of a kill box idea.
I mean, that can also be Venom, right? But let's back up to Spider-Man for a second. I just want to make sure it's clear right here. Jacob Xavier Protocols is saying definitively that Spider-Man is the best 4th character for Cabal. You heard it here. That's what he said, right? That was word for word.
I think the record will show that's maybe not quite what I said, but if you want to take it that way, then let's go with that.
I do think like one of the spiders is potentially very solid for that. But I like Valkyrie. one of the things I think you want to do on that side is you want a character that's potentially going to double move and actually like score the other spot. And so I think Valkyrie is very solid, where say your second to last activation is Loki walks forward, Mind Stones someone who has activated off of the point, and then he walks back to control his. And then they do their last activation, and then you still have Valkyrie, and she just double moves and throws the remaining character off of the point and then scores their point. Right? That's the sort of thing that I think you could do, like a dual threat situation where it's like firepower Cabal, control Cabal. You have to deal with both.
Mm. So we've talked about a lot of different affiliations, but one that I want to throw to you is Avengers. We haven't mentioned Avengers at all yet. So what do you think Avengers does with when it's got priority and when it doesn't have priority? How do you differ your team build in that particular affiliation?
It's interesting because I think when we did our Avengers episode, right, we said that they kind of want to adapt to either one. So I think Avengers is almost the pinnacle example of wanting to build for the specific situation. So let's say you have priority. I think this is a good one to potentially be including Shuri and Thor, right, where Thor or maybe even Black Panther. And then if you have Black Panther, you probably don't need Shuri, but I think you want to plan for one of those two characters to be your offense, potentially your first strike, where, you know, going into the beginning of round two, that you want to make a really impactful play and remove a character or daze a character, stagger the character, and you want to have as much reliability there as possible. Black Panther in particular, when he gets to mantle for one, you know, and then he gets all the rerolls on his attacks, like he can be a great character to just like pick off a three threat right away, like just remove a Zemo or a Valkyrie, or, you know, just that mid-tier character. Black Panther's pretty great at executing them. But Thor can go after some of the bigger targets, but if he's going to be your plan, I would include some reroll options like Shuri, or at least maybe have a Zemo in there. I think Zemo's a very good offensive, offensive Avenger. And he has some reroll tech built in as well. And you can also do like a drop-off play where you have Thor drops, you know, four Asgards and drops someone off as part of it, so you can get like one more attack in there. Zemo, I think if you watch the finals of TTS, you see that sort of move from Pat where, you know, believe it was right at the beginning of round two, he does a drop-off for Asgard with Thor dropping off Zemo, so Zemo gives him rerolls. You can absolutely do that in Avengers.
Yep.
And so I think, but you want some sort of reroll. Thor is not quite consistent enough by himself. And so do something to tweak that a little bit. And I think Zemo or Shuri are probably the obvious choices there. Now, if you don't have priority, I think you potentially can still run even the same characters, but you need a plan to play them differently. And so a big question is, What is your opponent going to be doing with their priority? If you look down at the roster and it's a Cabal roster, right, you want something that's going to potentially be able to tank MODOK. And that could be that you're going to pull in invulnerable characters like, say, Corvus and Proxima. I like having Corvus potentially opposite to MODOK because he's naturally just going to like take one less damage from all of those attacks. You've got a character that's very likely to be hitting three or four damage a shot, which means the invulnerability is more likely to matter. And you've got a character who can potentially count blanks on successes if you need to make attacks on MODOK. So you could be going a route like that. And then you can still potentially use Thor or Black Panther for sort of those late activation things where you can have Panther like pounce, long move, and then strike someone off of a point. And then Panther's a pretty durable guy to like be there and go, okay, I'm here and I'm going to now control this crisis, and being willing to like double move Thor. Now, if you end up in a spot where you're playing those characters and you're planning for the late play, but they haven't activated their big character yet, I think don't hesitate to have Thor shock them. Like, it is surprising how often shock is stagger.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times when they have their most effective character and then Thor shocks them, he doesn't need to deal damage. Like, sometimes you're actually happy when he doesn't deal damage with that hammer throw, because it's like, well, now you have no extra power from my attack, but you're shocked. And you've got to decide if you want to make both attacks at 4 dice instead of 5, or if you're just going to shake one of them. And then I got to stagger out of my throw. And so I think those, sometimes it's how you play the characters, but I think there's some very interesting things you can do with an Avengers roster that help you plan for either having priority or not having it. And if you listen to our Avengers episode, I would say Avengers probably need to have those two plans almost more so than any other affiliation.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that kind of brings us on to our final topic.
It does indeed. Okay, so I don't know the answer to this question, so I'm going to pose it, and I'm not sure that this will have a definitive answer, but I just think it's something worth discussing. And my thought is, when we were approaching this episode, is should a roster potentially have a team specifically designed for having priority and a team specifically designed for not having priority? Follow up, is that a totally different affiliation? Is the future of MCP a dual affiliation roster where I'm like, I'm playing this when I have priority or this when I don't? And then maybe even one step further, as we dig deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole, like, how much of that matters based on the crisis selection as well? Do you want to potentially be working in multiple team compositions where it's like, it's going to change pretty considerably depending on what the crisis is and depending on whether you have priority? So, Jacob, I'm just going to, like, as much as I just said right there, I'm going to throw you onto the spot right away and go, what are your initial thoughts, right? I'm not expecting you to have a concrete answer, but what are your thoughts on it so far after this discussion?
I think it hugely depends on which affiliation you're talking about. I mean, we've already mentioned Pat and his cabal, and he just goes, well, I'm playing four characters and I'll get priority. So whether I've got it or not doesn't matter. So for some affiliations with a certain game plan, that's kind of a null question. It's like, well, it's just, no, I'm going to play the same team because the team is designed to get me the thing I want. A bit like the Wakanda team that plays extra characters to make sure that they don't have priority. So again, there are certain teams who, just because of the way you're building the team, it means that this is not a topic that needs to be discussed. But there is a team, there is an affiliation I think that this is really relevant for, which is the Web Warriors. There's a lot of thinking, a lot of talk at the minute about Web Warriors on D-shape secures, so on Extremis and on the spider portals, that kind of thing. And that part of how you're going to deal with them is by denying them those secures and making them potentially bunch up where you can focus fire on them a lot more. So I think with Web Warriors, you might want to say, well, do you know what? If I get to choose secures, then great, I'm going to go with my Web Warriors. But if I'm going to be put onto a secure that's going to be disadvantageous for this particular affiliation, maybe I need a second affiliation to fall back onto. So I think probably more than any others, the Web Warriors want to have a dual affiliation.
Interesting. So I'm going to hit on your two answers kind of in order. Now, instinctively, I want to talk about Web Warriors just because I'm so excited about them in general. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to the Cabal topic first off. And I'm going to state my opinion, which is both hard because if you're just using Pat's most recent TTS game as an example, he did not have priority. He was playing four characters and he still won. Mm. But what I'm going to say is, what happens when you're playing, like, let's just say Pat has to play against himself. And both teams are a four-character Cabal team, right? Obviously, I think everyone would agree is if Pat's playing himself with a four-character Cabal team on both sides, the player with priority is going to be the one that wins that game, probably a vast majority of the time. And so the strategy worked for him in that situation because his opponent specifically chose a five-character team, and that was how he planned on playing. So obviously, maybe Pat's strategy changes if you're playing against someone who's playing it a bit more like himself. But I still think there's the potential for Cabal to need that plan, right?
I don't know. Just picking up on what you just said, I think in a 4v4, the priority is going to flip-flop a lot. I think it's going to be quite common for what for the priority character to daze without activating the non-priority character, one of the characters, the non-priority player. So then that immediately shifts priority back the other way. And I think there's going to be quite a lot of sort of back and forth on that throughout the course of that game. And I think controlling priority is probably the single most important thing in that game, that's along with the target selection. And of course, getting lucky with dice.
Yeah. And I think you want to have some plan though, right? So it's not just doesn't just come down to all the dice. You're like, okay, well, I got my MODOK activation the top of round two, and then you're going to get your MODOK activation the top of round three. And so maybe the exact card selection changes a little bit. Like, does field dressing become more important to the player who's going to have to take the first strike? You know, I don't know. Yeah. It's I'm not sure there's an easy answer.
And I think also cosmic configuration becomes more important to the player who doesn't have priority.
Very interesting.
More opportunities.
Yeah, that is interesting because theoretically, so assuming as long as you don't lose MODOK in the mirror and you have to take the assault round two, there is potential for you on your last activation to, if you can save Skull for that and be able to go, now I will cosmic invigorate now when I already am going to be losing priority to like set up something for the following round. I don't know. Very, very interesting thoughts. Okay. But I want to talk about Web Warriors because God, I'm so excited about Web Warriors. Obviously while I 100% agree with you that I think their primary plan is probably going to be D secures and like web, you know, web tricks, right? Like all of the web tricks, web appults, web lines, web, like all of it. And you're going to pull people off and like get ahead on this, on the score. They still have access to Venom, right? They have access to uneasy allies. They have access to all webbed up, which also increases damage output. And you've got characters like MODOK and Black Panther that both have a ton of synergy within the Web Warriors. So I'm not 100% convinced that they are the pinnacle example of needing a second affiliation, because I still think there's probably some teams that you could build there that absolutely like having priority.
Yeah, I can see what you're driving at. I'm very prepared to be wrong on this, but I don't think that's how they're going to pan out in the long run.
Fair enough. And I have zero games with them. I generally don't proxy. Thanos has been the one exception where I did proxy games because I had to try some things out. Yeah, but yeah. I've been painting Miles and Gwen literally like in the last 24 hours. So I'm excited to try them and get some more defined answers before I get to a Web Warriors affiliation episode. But if I have to just go back to the core question and say, do I think that the superior roster design would specifically have teams that can both play A to having priority and then having something different, potentially a totally different affiliation that you're going to play when you are going to not have priority? I think if I had to like hardline just say yes or no, I think the answer is yes. I think in general, the stronger roster will have both options built in and will not just be, I play the same rough team composition either way. But
or at least
I don't have a lot of evidence to like back up that thought, but that's just my initial thinking.
Yeah, I think it comes down to opportunity cost, doesn't it? Because you've only got 10 characters and 18 tactic slots. So can you fit all of that in, as well as covering a good range of crises that you think are likely to come up in your meta? So of the two, here's an interesting question then. Is it, I agree, that's in an ideal world, but is it more important to have those rosters for with and without priority? Or is it more important to have teams within your roster for a spread of crises?
I think the big question is obviously, I think the answer is yes to both. And you've got to find the middle ground, because obviously the rosters can't do everything, right? And that's why it's important to practice actual games where you're like restricting yourself to a roster configuration, where you can get a very bad idea of how a matchup plays out when you are not doing that. Because sometimes just having like one character, like sometimes that 11th character is a really important decision that can totally change certain matchups. You're like, well, like, say we were just talking about Hela in Cabal, right? Sometimes if she makes it into the roster, God, is that awful for Avengers. That is so awful when they have to have, when you have Hela on one side and MODOK on the other. But if she doesn't make it in, you know, you have something else for some other situation. Mm. And so I do think it's obviously it's a balance of both. But I think when we start to see some really standout rosters, and right now it's really hard to say because there's been so much experimentation. We don't have any long-standing meta in the same the way that, say, like a Magic the Gathering meta would be like, because a new set comes out and then you have 3 months to basically like grind games and like see what stuff stands above the rest. What combinations are the best in that moment? And we haven't had a lot of opportunities to see that. And maybe TTS to a certain degree gives us some inclination, but I'm not sure it paints the full picture. Because even if you're listening to the Across the Bifrost episode, Pat's saying like, these were some of my first times trying this stuff. And then he's like, I wanted to try Corvus and Proxima, but I never actually hit the 19 threat game where I could play Cabal plus Corvus Proxima. And that's where there still haven't been enough events, tournaments, games, that sort of thing to kind of answer some of these questions in a more concrete way. So I'm going to throw the question back at you. If you have to answer the question, again, we're guessing for the most part. We're educated guessing at best here. Mm-hmm. Would you say that the stronger roster is going to be one that has both potentially totally different teams or totally different affiliations, or the one that's just like, I have a general team plan and like customizations on that team based on the crisis, and that's really the focus, and I'm going to not let priority swing that as much either direction? Which of the two do you think, like, again, this is speculative, but I answered, so I'm going to make you answer too.
My answer, you might not like my answer, but my answer is I think that the roster piloted by a player who has given thought and consideration to that is in a better position. Now, it may be that they've given thought and consideration and said, I don't need to worry about it because I've got this reason and that reason and the other reason. But I think the kind of player who thinks about that kind of thing when they're building their roster is more likely to win, just because that's the kind of player who has got familiarity with these different things. They're not being thrown into things for the first time. They've had sort of mind experiments going through, okay, well, here's what I think I would do, and I think I would play it like this. I think that's going to bear out better results in the long run.
Jacob, have you ever considered being a politician? Because that was a very well-worded answer that doesn't answer the question. Like, I agree with everything you just said. There's no part of that I don't agree with. But again, we are talking about tournament lists with tournament players, that sort of thing, and trying to pick one or the other. And you're just saying, I think a tournament player playing a practice list that they think is the right choice is the right answer. But that doesn't answer the question.
Well, you bring up another good point there about levels of practice. That, you know, if it's a list I haven't practiced with, then I'm going to make mistakes that I wouldn't make, that a player who is going, well, I'm just playing this same list that is my favorite list. So it is a complex question, and there are a lot of...
Absolutely a complex question.
And I've realized I've just not answered the question again there, haven't I?
Correct. I'm really, like, have you considered running for office? Like...
I don't know.
Mayor or Governor Collins? Like, it's got a nice ring to it. But okay, so you got to take a stance one way or the other. Which one do you think? Like, obviously, there's not even a point of betting beers on this, because I'm not sure we'll ever have a definitive answer. But I am going to make you make a decision one way or the other. Don't make me edit something in where I just, like, answer this question, and then out of nowhere, it's just Jacob says, yes.
So, all things considered, I think that the crises are more important than the priority, is my gut instinct. So if you're thinking about tailoring your roster, my advice would be bring in characters who play well on the crises rather than play well with or without priority. That would be my gut instinct.
And I think I still agree with that concept as well. But that was close enough. I still think you gave me another political answer, which... but I'll cut you some slack. I think that's close enough. Because I do think that's an important consideration. That is one of the things you're going to have to be thinking about, because probably you're going, do I include these other things to help me have another option to drop on my opponent versus having the customization to like play in a greater variety of crisis combinations. I mean, there is a realistic reality that you're going to have to make decisions. And I think it is fair to say, emphasize the crisis more, because to even counter my own point, right? If you want to not have priority and you're playing like a 5-character team, there's going to be a lot of situations where after round one, you're not going to have priority.
Yeah.
Because you got the last action. It's really more specifically applies to when you have two teams that kind of both want the same thing. How is that going to play out? And does it just instinctively immediately favor the person who has the priorities, has the side of priority that they want?
Yeah, and this mirror matches are a great example of that. Cabal into Cabal, or Wakanda into Wakanda, or Avengers into Avengers, and thinking about, okay, how am I going to try and either get or lose priority that I want, thinking about how you can change your composition to account for that. You've got to have one of those two plans.
Agreed. All right, well, we're already running a little long on this one, which if you've listened to any episode with Jacob and I talking before, this should be of no surprise to anyone. Talk about two guys who can't shut up. I want to try to still keep this in a compact, like, absorbable amount of information. So I think we're going to call it here. I think this is a really interesting topic. And Jacob, I'm so glad you were able to hop on and, like, dojo around with it with me, because it is something that I'm trying to think about more. So as we're closing out the episode, I want to say, I don't shout this out every episode, but obviously I do have a Patreon. There's bonus episodes coming out every week. And so anyone who wants to support me, there is a great way to do that. There's videos on YouTube. Last couple of ones have actually been Jamie and I talking about what went into our team composition and kind of post-game analysis of the games on YouTube. So I've really enjoyed doing those. So if you want to check those out, it's basically $1 an episode. But I'm even more excited to talk about Jacob has a little project. I think little is probably an extreme extreme understatement. So Jacob, you have a podcast now.
Yeah. So I got approached by Dizzard, who organizes the TTS League, one of the people involved in organizing that. And he also recruited Sploosh, who's he's played in both of the finals of the TTS League. And together, the three of us are putting together a podcast called The Danger Room. We're trying to make it a bit different to the other podcasts. We're trying to look at it from a more macro strategic level. So we're trying to say, rather than diving into a character and really digging into how to get the most out of Thor or how to play against Thor, we're trying to look at things at a slightly higher level. We're going to be doing things around roster construction, looking at maybe both sides of an affiliation, but affiliation is kind of the most granular we might look at something. We're trying to give big picture ideas to try and help you level up your game. That's kind of our strap line.
I love it. I love it. I have listened to the first episode. You guys have dropped a kind of like an icebreaker sort of episode, like get to know the host before you dive into your normal content. And I'm really enjoying the synergy between the three of you. And I'm really excited for future episodes.
Mm. So if you want to find us, then probably the best place to look at the minute is on Facebook. So our Facebook page is facebook.com/The Danger Room Podcast. And from there, you'll be able to find links to all the episodes we're going to put out.
Listeners, you should absolutely go check out The Danger Room. I believe it is already up on Anchor and on Spotify. And I imagine probably coming to iTunes and other locations soon. So The Danger Room with Xavier Protocols, Dizard, and Sploosh. What a great combination of cast.
Yeah, no, I think we've had a lot of fun recording the first one. It's already in the can. So yeah. Looking forward to doing more of them.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to close out this episode and say the most OP thing you can do is go check out The Danger Room. Later, nerds.